children.
Times a leader expert, and he wanted to pass some courses to up his credentials. So he went on the computer to help him, and there was somebody advertising. Where they were advertising from will become relevant in a minute. But anyway, they said, we will help you to pass more and more advanced courses. So he thought, great, let's see what they have to say. So he made contact with them and said, I want to do such and such a course. Can you help me? So they said, yes, we can guarantee you will pass. We can guarantee it. So he thought, well, maybe I'm thick. How are they going to guarantee? So he thought, something smells a bit fishy over here. So he said to him, tell me, how are you going to guarantee that I'm going to pass? So he said, well, we are going to take the tests for you. So I said, I see. So they were based in India, and this was a business, borderline criminal business, or a definite criminal business. And they said, we'll take the tests for you, and we will impersonate you. We'll take your ID. We'll do whatever it is to present ourselves as though we're you. And we have people who are experts in all the various courses that you would want to take. They'll fill out the forms, whatever the test is, and you'll get the marks. So he was pretty disturbed by this. So he said to them to wind them up, he said, tell me, do you do this in other subjects as well? So they said, yes, we do. So he said, so for example, if I wanted to become a doctor, could you help me to become a doctor? So they said, yes. So he said, well, don't you think that it would be worth my while to know how to be a doctor before I start seeing patients? You're going to help me become a doctor, and I don't know medicine. So they said to him, sir, this is not above boards. This is not a legal enterprise, but they said it in a way that they meant, read between the lines. So he decided to do a bit of research. What's going on with these guys? I mean, surely pretending to be somebody else so you can pass an exam is bad enough, but they were worse than that. So he looked up, what do they do? So after they help you to pass the exams, then they keep track of your acceptances of jobs. They track you. So a person then will take a job. And in America, if you present yourself fraudulently as having certain credentials, it's not only that you'll lose your job, but it's a criminal act. So then, after the person takes the job, gets settled in the job, they follow you up, and then they say, we will reveal that you have not taken these exams to your employer unless you pay us such and such amount of money. Good old-fashioned blackmail. So this is the world we live in. But I thought, as he told me this incredible mashal, because Chazal say there's somebody else who does something like this, none other than the Yetzirah. In Bava Basra, we say, Reish Lakish says, Hu is Satan, v'hu a Yetzirah, hu malach amaves. First he comes to tempt you, and then he's going to get you in trouble. He carries out the accusation. They haven't gotten to the level with the malach amaves, so they still have what to aspire for, these chevra in India. Anyway, we have to know, as Rosh Hashanah comes closer, we're dealing with a very, very serious opponent. The Satan is not... is not for beginners. So we need some advice. How are we going to make it through the judgment? If people, the criminals I'm talking about, they just have the seichel enoshi to come up with these things, you better believe that the Satan has some pretty serious plans in store, and we need some help. So everybody knows that when we blow the shofar, so the Satan is supposed to be silenced. Okay, not a bad defense, Satan is silenced, but surely there's something more we can do. A quiet accuser is good, but we need more than that. So we say, we have a plan. We're going to spend the day, we're going to daven, we'll work on accepting Hashem's malchus, and we won't eat nuts. Well, that's a joke, because we know nuts are the gematria of chet, but someone once said as a joke, they said, but also chet has the gematria of chet. So let's avoid that as well. So we're banking a bit on Bashir Husham. How will we be on the day of Rosh Hashanah? We should behave ourselves. And someone said to me, well, I don't know how I'm supposed to behave in front of a king. Well, I know one person who met the royal family. Most of us don't have any shaykhs. And the royal family today is not exactly the king that we're talking about. But we're very little musak. So I said to him, well, picture yourself going on a job interview. All of a sudden, if people go on a job interview, they become very, very self-conscious about how they say, what they do. They wouldn't want to misrepresent themselves in any way. And that's a small dugma of if you're going to do the Bashir Husham of presenting yourself well in front of the king, so start with that. But I want to go into something deeper. I'm not here just to say the things, hopefully, that you all know, although there's something to be gained from hearing the things we all know. We put them back into the front of our mind. But there's a very essential part of Avodas Rosh Hashanah which I think is overlooked, and I'll try to explain myself. And that is, and you're going to say to me, come on, this is easy, how does the shofar fit into the big picture of Rosh Hashanah? What do you mean, the big picture? Well, you could say, shofar is a mitzvah d'oraisa, we're blowing shofar in Rosh Hashanah, and that's it. Like, what do you mean, the big picture? The big picture is you're supposed to do it. Like, how does lulav fit in the big picture of sukkahs? It's the mitzvah. So it's true, it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, and I would say to you, if that's all you view for a shofar, then so is benching. So I hope your benching is good in Rosh Hashanah, because isn't there something deeper than blowing shofar than just we're filling a mitzvah d'oraisa, which is a great thing? So people have said, well, it's a mitzvah b'shaita, it's the time for the mitzvah, so it's not just a mitzvah, it's the special mitzvah of the day. I agree. This is all true. I'm not trying to belittle any of these answers, but I think there's something even more, and that's the specific nature of mitzvah shofar. And to bring this question, to bring this out, I want to ask you all an obvious question. I'm sure it struck many of you. It's discussed by some of the Mefarshim. If you look in the Chumash, what is the name of Rosh Hashanah? Well, two times it's called with a name that I think we wouldn't have chosen. Not that Hashem needs my haskama, but it's not the obvious name of the day. It says in Vayikra Yiyeh Lechem Shabosin Zichron Trua Mikra Kodesh, calling the day a Trua day. And then, again, in Bamidbar, it says, Yom Trua Yelachem. So now, what would we have called Rosh Hashanah? Somebody came to you and they said, okay, give us a name, give us a name. What's the name for Rosh Hashanah? We want to put in the Chumash, Lenetzach. What name would you want the Yiddish people to think Rosh Hashanah is? I'm taking suggestions. I've asked a few people this. There was a pretty common answer. What would you all call Rosh Hashanah? Yom Tshuva. Yom Adin, right? Okay, but I think we would have thought that intuitively that's a better name. There's a chutzpah, because obviously it's not for me to say what's a better name, but the day, as way Chazal described it, is a Yom Adin. And it's kivyochel in our minds, we might think that Hashem has taken the tuffel and missed the ikker in the way he named it. It's shayach, it's trua. But trua is a detail in the mitzvah shofar, so at least call it Yom Shofar or something like that. Why are we picking this seeming detail in the day, which is this awesome day? And my analogy was, imagine you would get a wedding invitation from one of your friends, and he's got a nice bank account, so he's hired for the wedding a big name singer, whoever you want, fill in the blank. So, and the invitation says, please come on such and such a day to such and such a hall, where, pick a name, MBD will be playing, and my daughter will be getting married. Like, a side point. You missed the whole thing. So, what is the day? The day is Yom Hadin. So, what is Trua? Where does Trua fit into this? So, that's the question I want to address. Why did the Torah pick the name Yom Trua? And we'll see, it not only is our mistake that we think it picked a tuffel, it's the ikur, and it's a megala to us, the whole yesod of what the Yom Hadin is about. And we'll see, hopefully, how we can come out from the Yom HaDin with Hatzlocha. So that's a pretty important name to figure out. So some answers I saw that why the name is given, which I think it's fair to mention them because I'm entitled, I guess, to give my opinion, but some of this forum have spoken about it before. One of them is that if a person would know that it was called Yom HaDin, so they may say, oh, that's Yom HaDin. Well, I guess I can wait till then. I don't need to do teshuva beforehand because that's in 6 months' time. So a person may delay in doing his teshuva, and the Torah wouldn't want anybody to miss even a single moment where they might do teshuva. So that's one answer. And another one, which seems to be, it's the mitzvah of the day, like we said, someone timed it to me, look at Pesach, called in the Torah, Chag HaMatzos. So we see we do sometimes name Yom Tovim by the mitzvah of the day. But I want to come back to my suggestion that it could be that these are reasonable ideas, but let's call a spade, and stop beating around the bush. What is the day? The entire world's judgment hinges on this day. Life and the opposite hinges on this day. It's a big day in terms of din. Tell people what they're facing. Don't tell them something that's going on the side, the music, the Yom Teruah about it. Tell us, this is serious. This is the judgment for the year. So that's what I'm going to try to address, to explain how the trua of the shofar on Yom HaDin and the name Yom Trua sheds light on the entire nature of the day of Rosh Hashanah. In order to do that, first I'm going to bring out some points about shofar and its connection to Yom HaDin, and then we'll hopefully wrap it up and get a clearer picture. I admit to you some of these things, you say, yes, we've heard them, but as I said before, there's no harm in what we've heard before and know from before, putting them into the front of our minds, and I think you'll see some of them are really things you probably never heard before. I'd never heard them, and I hope you'll have a combination of old things and new things. First of all, so what's the idea of the shofar? So let's see, what is the object of the shofar? So this one you will have heard, the shofar is a ram's horn, remind us of the Akedah. And, okay, it's reminded of the Akedah. What's that bringing out? So we say the Akedah was this moment in Jewish history where there was the greatest acts of devotion to Hashem. But on Tut Stadim, everybody knows, or I think some people make the mistake, and they say that it was Yitzchak's self-sacrifice, willing to die for Hashem. That was the greatness. So it's true, giving up your whole life to serve Hashem, and he did it with total conviction that this was what I'm supposed to do. His actions were completely devoted to Hashem, but they also say, and again, this is things we've heard, that Avram's sacrifice was no less. What did he sacrifice? Okay, he sacrificed his son, but more than that, he sacrificed his mind. That means his whole life he had been teaching, and the message, and his whole embodiment of who he was and what he wanted to bring to the world was chesed, and now he's being told to do the opposite because Hashem told him to. So this is the idea of being machnia, our minds, to serve Hashem. And that's an incredible, incredible hachno before the Rabbeinu Shleilim. So these are supposed to be two models for us as we reach towards Rosh Hashanah. What are we supposed to be? What's our avodah? Our avodah is, shofar reminds us, your actions, your minds, your thoughts. And in some ways, thoughts are easier to hide from Hashem, kiviyochel. Because you could say, I look for him on the outside. But what do you think about? So that is actually a very big sacrifice. Say, I'm going to limit my thoughts to Torah thoughts. I think they asked Rav Moshe Feinstein once, how did he arrive at a certain psak? So he said something to the effect of, the Torah tells me so. The Torah tells me so. He didn't give a specific location for his psak. So they said, but if you're not listing a specific maramokim, so then how do you know that the Torah says this? So he said about himself, which I think only a Gadol could say, or maybe not, maybe the others in the room can say this. He said, because since the time of my youth, I never let enter my mind anything other than Torah. My mind is a total product of Torah. If this is what my mind thinks, this is what the Torah would say. Now, okay, speaking for myself, that's beyond me, but there is something to it that we can chab, that how much are we going to make the taruvus of Torah with other things, and we can all take on a little bit less. So that's being machni our minds to Hashem. Okay, and the second one, and this was to me a very new idea. This is from the Aris Dvash, and I think others for him point out. They say, we've spoken about what the shofar is, now consider what's the shape of the shofar. So you tell me, well, they're different shapes. Now, there's the curly ones, the bent ones, the straight ones. But the Aris Dvash doesn't say like that. He says, the shape of the shofar, I'll quote you, hear what he says. Atzmusoi shel shofar hu moira b'dmusoi b'tzalmoi al vav. The whole shape of the shofar, so to speak, is crying out, I look like the letter Vav. So you'll say to me, does it look like a letter Vav? It's bent. It's interesting kashas, all the different shapes of shofars. I'm not going to answer. This is the Aris Dvash. So he understands what the essence of shofar is. He says it's the shape of the Vav. So the object is telling us something about the letter Vav. So now, what is Vav? What is a Vav? So obviously, Vav is part of the Aleph base, but it has more meaning, the name itself, which we're going to try to understand. So first of all, what does a Vav do in a sentence? It's a chibur. It connects ideas, it connects words. The word itself is and. If we had to translate it, we'd say and that means two things together. The idea is connecting. And if you look in the Chumash, there is a chefetz called the Vav, right? What does a Vav do? The Vav was in the Mishkan, and it's a hook. So if you took the peroiches and you wanted to build the Mishkan, you hang them on the Amudi Shittim, they would put a Vav on there to hold them up, and that way you could put together the Amudim together with the peroiches. Again, joining. So it holds together two things. So now, okay, so now bring it back to Rosh Hashanah. What exactly are we joining? What is the shofar doing? What are we connecting? So what would you say? What are we trying to connect on Rosh Hashanah? So it's, the answer seems to be what we're connecting is us to Hashem. The thing that we need to connect is ourselves with the Ribbono Shel'olam. Now you'd say, what does that mean? What does it mean to connect? So I'll try to explain. So it is a day of judgment. Definitely. You know, Rosh Hashanah is a day of judgment. But the Vav and the Teruah, the Shofar, are teaching us, why is there a judgment? Why is there a judgment? Yeah, it's a day of judgment. It's something to take to heart. It's serious business. But why are we being judged? So some people might say, well, why does anybody get judged? What do you say? Why do people get judged? What's the point? Well, typically, what it means is you want a society of law-abiding citizens. You have justice to create a society where people act doing what they're supposed to do. So is that all Rosh Hashanah is? Does he need a bunch of Yidden who are law-abiding? There's a milah. You know, we do mitzvahs and we don't do averas. That's wonderful. I'm not trying to belittle that. But this judgment is different. And that's what the Teruah, that's what the Shofar is telling us. Not the standard judgment of, let's get everybody in order. Let's just do what we're supposed to do. The judgment of Rosh Hashanah is supposed to be a judgment of chibur, of coming close to Hashem. We're supposed to do teshuva. Teshuva, we know, the shurish is to return. We're supposed to return to Hashem. It's the first day of the Seres Yimei Teshuva. So how is Rosh Hashanah accomplishing that? How is the judgment accomplishing that? So within the judgment, it gives us a push. If you're never held accountable for what you do, if your wife would never say to you, you came home late for supper, so moment of truth, the judgment stands. But she's not just telling you, the food's getting cold, maybe she's telling you that as well. But what she's saying is, you don't consider me enough. You're not thinking about all the work that I put into this. It's a moment of judgment, but she's not out to get you. I mean, I don't know all of you, but generally speaking, they're not out to get us. Yeah, but she's trying to say the relationship needs work. The judgment is a way of saying, wake up and smell the coffee. We need to be closer. We need to make our times fixed. We need to have time together. It's a judgment? It's a judgment, yes. But it's a judgment with a tachlis of being closer. So we're going to come to the word what teruah means. But it's a good question. It's a fair question. In fact, yeah. Okay. So, well, if you're not answered at the end, then come back to me. But I think hopefully I'll give you an answer. Okay. So we're saying Rosh Hashanah, the judgment is to help us. It's not a judgment that the king needs loyal subjects. It's for our benefit. We should return to him. We should connect with him. We should improve our relationship. And that is what teshuva is. So now. The thing is like this, that Rosh Hashanah is very easy to lose this picture, to not keep in mind that it's a relationship building day and just see it as a day of judgment. So we act our best, we try not to insult people, we try to be mavater and all the great things that we do, but what's the bigger picture? So Shimshon Pinkas has a very interesting moshel for how people can miss this. He says there's sometimes businessmen whose businesses don't succeed. But if you interview them, you find out, like, what went wrong. And it turns out they were very clever. They're very hardworking. They knew about supply and demand. They knew about keeping track of the inventory. They knew how to handle their staff. But somewhere along the line, they didn't know how to actually make money. Meaning something went wrong with they had 50 skills. But somewhere along the line, and I knew somebody who had such a business, he worked like a dog, unbelievably. But in the end, his business collapsed. He just didn't make money. So the test for a person in business is, are you making money? All the other skills are wonderful skills, and you can say, put them on your CV, but that's not going to pay for the mortgage. So he said, in the same way in Rosh Hashanah, we have to be careful that we don't get lost in all the pratim, and we don't walk away with the relationship. We don't walk away with a kesher to our king, with a relationship that will carry us through the year as to who we are, what we're doing, because of our shaykhus to Hashem. One last nakuda, just somebody passed when I was preparing the shir, and they said to me, did you know that the Sifsei Chaim says the word teruah itself, which maybe is a little answer to you, comes from the same shurish as hisorus, to awaken. So that's a partial answer. I'll try to give you more than that. So the third point along this line of thinking is we've spoken about the shofar itself, about its shape. Now let's talk about its sound. So what is the sound of the shofar? How is it described in Chazal? So in Rosh Hashanah Daf Lamed Gimel, it says, it's a machlokes, what is the proper sound? What are we supposed to be making with the shofar? Is it genuchi ganach and mar savar yelulei yolil? Two different possible sounds. So the Yaris Navash, again, in that same mimer that he's writing, Vav, interestingly, is mimer Vav, but he says there are different ways to write the letter Vav. And he takes on that either the Iker way or an important way to consider is when you spell Vav, Vav Aleph Vav. Right? You can spell it with a Yud in the middle, but he says if you spell it Vav Aleph Vav, so then it explains something deep about shofar. He says like this, while the two Vavs on the outside are about Chibur, about making a connection, we said to Hashem, what's with the Aleph in the middle? So an Aleph is apparently understanding an idea of lacking, of being impoverished, we are lacking. So you've got this, he calls it the cry of the shofar in the middle. The Vav is telling us that we're supposed to be doing the crying that the shofar creates. And what are these sounds like? So the Mefarshim explain, what are these two cries? One is apparently women would get together when someone was nifter, lo aleinu, and they would lament together. They would cry together as a group. And that's one of the sounds. Or the other sound could have been the sigh of a person who is suffering and deeply pained. So these people cry for a lot of reasons. People cry over a loss of money. I don't know. People cry over whatever you like. But that's not what these cries are. Some people cry from joy. These are not these cries. These are cries of loss over something very precious and a yearning to get it back. Either the lamenting or a person in pain who wants his health back, whatever it is, that's what these cries are supposed to be. And this is, again, reflecting the idea of what is the Yom HaDin. What are we yearning? We said, what are we trying to make the chibur between? We're yearning the loss of our relationship with Hashem. We're yearning that we've distanced ourselves from Hashem. And we're not supposed to have a day just being scared of the judgment. We're scared of the judge. That's not what it's about. We're crying, we wish we were close to the judge. We wish that the melech would be, again, our good kivyochel, our good friend. That's what we're missing. And we're in some ways, the cry of the shofar is the cry that we've drifted off course in life. And we've weakened our connection with Hashem. And that's something worth crying about. And that's something worth saying. We desperately, desperately want this back. So it comes out that this truer sound then is really touching on the essence of rebuilding our relationship and explains to us what the judgment is, what it's for. So if so, this is the perfect name in the Torah that is the Yom Teruah. Because if we call it Yom HaDin, you could walk away thinking it's a day where I've got to face the judge. But it's not just facing the judge. You're mourning that you're far from the judge and you wish you were closer. If we would just view it as a day of judgment, so then we'd come with a totally different attitude. We say, we've come into court, we need a good defense, and maybe we scraped by with something, but we really were like the businessman who didn't make money. We had a project to hand, we ticked all the boxes, so to speak, but did you walk away with the profits? And the profits in this sense is referring to that we walked away with relationship with the king. So, just in summary, I don't want people to walk and say, but how did you answer the question? So the shofar's cry, we're saying, is a cry of trying to make a relationship. And the name and the shofar itself, Yom Teruah, are defining for us what the tshuva is all about and the point of the judgment. So we're saying, according to all this, the day is a perfect fit. And I say again, Hashem doesn't need my haskama, but at least it's good to have a havana, what the name fits in. It's more than fits in. It illuminates what the day is all about. It also, I thought, Agav explains something else. And that is, we say, when we blow the shofar, Hashem goes from the Kisei Adin to the Kisei Rachamim. Well, why should it? What's the magic of shofar? So, according to this Havana, we have a nice explanation. Imagine you have a judge, and you're facing this case, and just before the judgment, you find out you're related to the judge. And he's actually a very, very close relative. So now, if a king has to judge somebody who is his very close relative, isn't it obvious that his attitude and the way which the judgment will go will be directed by Rachamim and not by B'midas Adin? So when we blow the shofar and we're saying, Hashem, we want this relationship with you, we're showing that the relationship we want in some ways justifies that the judgment should go from the Kisei Adin to the Kisei Rachamim. Now, we see we just have a minute or two left, so I'll try to wrap things up. People are sometimes overwhelmed by the quantity or the quality of teshuva that they have to do. I've tried to explain, I hope, that it's not as far from us as we think. In fact, it's Hashem wants us to succeed. The Rambam writes like this. This is in Perek Vav in Hilchos Teshuva. He says, V'hu ma'asha amru v'b'sein ezekhren levrocha ba'al etayim esayin oisoi. Person comes to matai himself, Hashem will help you. He wants your success. He wants you to come closer. Klomar, yimso atzmoi ne'ezar al hadavar. You will find that you were helped. Interesting lashon of the Rambam. You will find it. Means it seems to be perceivable that as you move closer to Hashem, you should feel a certain amount of, especially in Elul, we're deep in Elul now. If you start making the movements, or maybe you're already well into the movements, you should feel, I want to take advantage of Elul, I want to be ready for Rosh Hashanah. You should be able to find it, he says, that you're being helped. But you have to take the step towards wanting to find it. So that's stage one. The other words of the Rambam, which I think are a fantastic incentive to doing tshuva and to taking it seriously, this is in Perek Zion. He says, Kama Milus. How great are the advantages of tshuva? He says, yesterday a person could have been far from Hashem. He would cry out, Hashem wouldn't necessarily answer him. He'd do mitzvahs, and Hashem would say, your mitzvahs aren't desirable. Now he moves towards tshuva, hayomu muvdak b'shechina. He clings to the shechina. Soyak v'nen amiyad. He cries out and he's answered straight away. He does his mitzvahs and Hashem receives them. He takes them with pleasure and with joy. And he says, "V'loy oid." He says that Hashem is waiting for them. "V'savim lahem." Hashem minchas yudu yishlam kimei oidam kshayim kadmoni ois. The Hashem is literally waiting for us to do tshuva. So we're not in this alone. We're moving towards a king who's waiting with his kiviyachol, with his hands out to grab us. He's waiting to bring us close. So I'm hoping that this is all a message to us, a chizuk for preparation of Rosh Hashanah. We shall be zeicher to be a skoyel bin tzedek bin heri v'yameinu. Okay.
Why is it called Yom Tshuva?
Would you have understood if it was called Yom Tshuva? So I'm supposed to move close, but would I have understood that I'm supposed to be...